ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धर्मज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नश्च तृषाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः। Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, this is Canto 6, Chapter 1, The History of the Life of Ajamila, and today we're on text 47. I'll kindly repeat. Vartamanah anyayoho kalah guna abhipalak abhijnapakah yatha evam जन्म अन्ययोः एतत् धर्म अधर्म निदर्शनम् वर्धमानोऽन्ययोः कालो गुणाभिज्ञापको यथा एवं जन्मान्ययोरेतद् धर्माधर्म निदर्शनम् वर्धमानोऽन्ययोः कालो गुणाभिज्ञापको यथा एवं जन्मान्ययोरेतद् धर्माधर्मनिदर्शनम् वर्धमानोऽन्ययोः कालो गुणाभिज्ञापको यथा एवं जन्मान्ययोरेतद् धर्माधर्मनिदर्शनम् Ladies. Vartamana, the present. Anyayoho, of the past and future. Kala, time. Guna abhijnapaka, making known the qualities. Yatha, just as. Evam, thus. Janma, birth. Anyayoho, of the past and future births. Etat, this, dharma, religious principles, adharma, irreligious principles, nidarshanam, indicating. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. just as springtime in the present indicates the nature of springtimes in the past and future, so this life of happiness, distress, or a mixture of both, gives evidence concerning the religious and irreligious activities of one's past and future lives. Please repeat. Just as springtime in the present indicates the nature of springtimes in the past and future, so this life of happiness, distress, or a mixture of both, gives evidence concerning the religious and irreligious activities of one's past and future lives. Purport. Our past and future are not very difficult to understand, for time is under the contamination of the three modes of material nature. As soon as spring arrives, the usual exhibition of various types of fruits and flowers automatically becomes manifest. And therefore we may conclude that spring in the past was adorned with similar fruits and flowers, and will be so adorned in the future also. Our repetition of birth and death is taking place within time, and according to the influence of the modes of nature, we are receiving various types of bodies and being subjected to various conditions. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yutupada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavane Shri Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vansha Kalpadurubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavanda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Yesterday we heard that we can see different varieties of life which are due to the contamination of the three modes of nature. We can see those who are peaceful, those who are restless, and those who are foolish. Those who are happy, unhappy, or in between, religious, irreligious, or semi of either one. And therefore we can extrapolate that in the next life we'll see similar varieties. Here we're continuing the same logic. It says that just as now we can see spring, so similarly we can deduce that there have been similar springtimes in the past and that in the future it will continue. Every morning the sun rises and we expect that because of our experience. It's stable. Yat chakshuresha savitasa kalagrahanam raja samasta sura murtir ashesha teja. Ashesha teja means infinite potency. The sun is burning in the sky since time immemorial. and has apparently infinite potency. Therefore, we meditate on the Son as the representative of the Supreme, because he also has infinite potency, or so it would seem. Now, the Son, yasyajnaya bhramati sampritakala chakro, govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. The Son is carrying out his prescribed duty of rising and setting at exactly the same, or at the required time, every single day. No deviation whatsoever. Steadier than any of us. Now what happens, and this is called dharma, this dedication, this state, stability, it's called dharma. As we know, the word dharma has many meanings, but this is one of them. Or rather, I should say, this is one aspect of what dharma means. Dharma has only one meaning, but it's very complex, very sophisticated concept. So this is one of the aspects. What happens if the Son decides not to wake up one day, not to rise, not to perform its duty? Immediately the three worlds will be thrown into disarray. There are many living entities who will simply die as a result of that. This is the result of adharma. We are not alone. Just like in any family, it's well known amongst social work circles. If there's an alcoholic in the family, the entire family is affected by that. It's not just the person himself. So all of us are interconnected. Everything is interdependent. We're all in a symbiosis, to use a fancy scientific term. Symbiosis means everybody depends on the other one. So Varnashram Dharma is like that also. Srila Prabhupada, in his final days in this world, he gave us the instruction to establish Varnashram Dharma. He was very serious about this. I like to quote the facts and figures. I think it was Burke Roquefort. He did a sociological survey on ISKCON in the 1980s. And maybe it was him, actually. He also found that Srila Prabhupada gave 80% of the instructions that he gave on the topic of Varnashram Dharma within the last few years that he was with us. And it would seem as if he did so because he found that ISKCON was his disciples, his own people, the inside people, were having problems that were directly based on the fact that they had not developed the proper samskaras, having had no training to make devotional service easy. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, in the end of chapter 7, anybody know, text 49? Yesham tuantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mandrathavrata. They worship me with firm devotion. They can sustain a mature commitment to pure devotional service who are acting in piety right now and who have also become freed from the illusions that result from impiety. And this is why Narottam Das Thakur says that sense gratification is poison, because it perpetuates and fortifies our dualistic notions that are essentially illusory. And on the basis of those illusions, we harm ourselves, and because we're all interconnected, we also harm others. So we can learn from the Son. We're enjoined to meditate on the Son three times a day, because the Son never deviates from his prescribed duty, and similarly, these seasons are coming. Now, what happens when adharma becomes more prominent? When adharma becomes more prominent, then everything starts going haywire. I like to point out that someday people will refuse to believe that there was ever such a silly notion as, for example, amphibians. Because we all know that amphibians worldwide, they're disappearing. And probably as a result of what we've done to their environment. Just like there are many other species that are endangered by our activities. This is called adharma. And it screws everything up. Everything becomes completely messed up. So much so that one cannot even see very clearly. The very teachings of the Bhagavatam in this verse will be hard for people to grasp one day. Maybe several hundred years into the future, we don't know when it's coming. But we already have been experiencing in the recent months, it seems as if the seasons are completely messed up, doesn't it? We didn't never really had a summer here in Los Angeles this year. Little few days only. So similarly, I was meditating the other day that servant, we talk about becoming a servant. In America, we don't really know what it means to be a servant. We don't have servants in America. We have domestic help, right? This is usually from south of the border, someone that we, illegal, someone we hire. And it's a different concept. In India, you have a proper concept of what a servant is because the culture has been sustained. What kind of cultural continuity sustains the notion of what it means to be a servant? When I was in college, I took a history class. And in our textbook, the authors were writing that they found shards of these glass, what do you call it, churiyan, bangles that women wear. Even now, they're wearing them in India, the cheap things you can find in many different colors. They have found shards of these things from about 3,000 or 4,000 years ago in the Punjab Valley. That means that women have been wearing these in North India for 3,000 or 4,000 years. That's all it could mean, pretty much. That kind of cultural continuity will sustain the notion of what it means to be a servant. And that's very essential to Krishna consciousness. If we have no concept of what it means to be a mother or a father, for example, then how in the world are we going to cultivate Vatsalya Rasa, if that's our choice? If we have no idea what it means to be a servant, if we have no example of what servitude is, then how in the world are we going to learn how to become Krishna's servant or the servant of Krishna's devotee? These are very important things. And it seems to me, at least, that this is one reason, among many others, mind you, that Srila Prabhupada saw fit to encourage this idea of Varnashram Dharma, because it causes problems, as we've been explaining here, trying to illustrate. So in the past and in the future, now in the past we can understand that there have been springtimes in the past and we have experienced them, and we can expect that around March, April, May, springtime will come again. So what about the future? Here it says that also in the future we can extrapolate, it will be in the same. Springtime in the present indicates the nature of springtimes in the past and in the future. So, that's the analogy given, and then what it's meant to illustrate is that this life of happiness and distress and a mix of each gives evidence concerning the religious and irreligious activities of our past. That's clear to understand, but what about our future? How does it give evidence of our future? It's a problem, isn't it? Anybody have any sagacious input on this? Any ideas about this? How does our experience of happiness and distress right now, how does it indicate the nature of our religious or irreligious activities in the future? No one has any ideas? Because we react to the situation. We do not exist in stasis. We're not in a static condition. We have to do something at all times. You are going to act. You're going to make choices. We are making choices. We're not even conscious of the choices that we're making, because everything is adharmic. When dharma is removed, then everything becomes haywire. It's like a dust storm, just like when Kamsa sent Putana to come to Braj and kidnap Krishna. Child abduction. Trinavarta first had to create this dust storm and cover everyone's vision, right? You can say that's like the avaranatmika shakti of Maya. So this becomes very much facilitated when dharma is missing, this kind of confusion. So everything becomes unclear and we can't see anything. So we can't even begin to consider that how our past activities have created our present situation. Go and look in the mirror. Whatever you're looking at, when you look in the mirror, that is your past. And we can't see the subtle body really that gave rise to this gross material body, but this gross material body is itself a evidence. It is as if the a list of all the charges stamped on our forehead, and everywhere we go, it's there to remind us and remind others of what we've done in the past. You see. So similarly, if we have done something sinful in the past that impacts the choices that we make now in this life, then those choices themselves will create the future body that we will be forced to inhabit. So one way or the other, we are acting, we are choosing, we are implicating ourselves in this intensely complicated web of fruitive reaction. This is the great game of karma, which we call pravritti marga. Pravritti marga means that one has decided, either because of envy of Krishna, that I don't want to get out of this material world, or one might have decided also because of the discouragement of seeing the truth of one's own anarthas, that there's no chance that I'm ever going to get out of this in this life, because this also happens. But either way, pravritti marg means one has to try to play this game very carefully in such a way as to minimize the distress and to maximize the auspicious reactions. So that's not encouraged, and we've already been there. It's already been described in this previous chapters, actually, and beginning of this chapter also, that trying to keep one's nose clean in terms of karma and act judiciously in such a way that one can sustain a relatively comfortable position in this material world forever, or virtually forever, that's not really a good opportunity, because we have four defects. Sometimes we cheat, and all cheating begins with self-deception. Sometimes we are in illusion, and a big part of that illusion is the fact that we have imperfect faculties with which to perceive reality. Just like the way a fly sees reality and the way a human being sees reality, they're being filtered through different karmas, aren't they? And there's different hardware associated with those different karmas, isn't it? If our karma is the software, then the gross physical body is the hardware. And a fly simply does not have the system requirements to have the same sorts of perceptions that a human being has. He's got a compound eye. He's going to see things very, very differently. Virtually, he lives in a different world altogether. Whether it's a different physical location or not, it hardly matters in terms of his subjective experience. So this is the situation that we're also in. We don't consider. We assume, just like Americans. Americans are notorious now, worldwide. And everybody knows that if you speak English everywhere in the world, now people speak English. But the only persons who do not speak with an accent are the Americans, isn't it? Everyone else has an accent. You've got a British accent, or you've got a Ukrainian accent, or with an Indian accent, or whatever. But Americans, we speak the pure English. So in a similar way, the conditioned soul assumes that, you know, what I'm seeing here is actually reality, but we have no idea what's going on. Everything is totally conditioned by our karma. And our whole picture is being skewed by that karma. And we have no chance of getting out of this mess by ourselves. We need to ruminate on these things. And that's why these verses are given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Once we get a sense of how we are conditioned, this is something that Krishna says in chapter 15, Anybody know the verses that I'm thinking? Chapter 15 of the Bhagavad Gita. One who can see how one is entangled in the material nature, that person can begin to get out of it. Utkramantam stitam vapi bhunjanam bhagunanvitah vimudhananu pashyanti pashyantya jnana shakshashaha yatanto yoganashtainam pashyantyatman yachetasaha. I don't remember. This is the idea. So therefore Srimad Bhagavatam deals in a large measure with principles of material nature. Metaphysics, we can call this. How, not necessarily all just pure spiritual things, not just Krishna Lila. There are other things that are also important, because if we want to get into Krishna Lila, then we have to control our minds, we have to control our senses, we have to become devotees. And in order to become devotees, we have to know how the mind is operating, how the body is operating, how the senses are operating, what the conditioning factors are. Conditioned. This word is used here. The final sentence of his purport, Srila Prabhupada says, our repetition of birth and death is taking place within time. And according to the influence of the modes of nature, we are receiving various types of bodies and being subjected to various conditions. Conditions. So what does it mean to be a conditioned soul? It means that, well, as soon as the conditions that have conditioned us are, let's say they're instantly removed, all the karma that we have become attached to and expecting things to go on very smoothly, these things are all conditional existence. If that's very suddenly removed, then our whole reality is like the floor is pulled out from underneath one, and we freak out. And that's generally what happens when? At the time of death. I went to visit my father. He passed away a decade or so ago. And I went to visit him when he was in the hospital. And it was one thing to visit my father, who didn't really have such a bad time of it, although spinal cancer is generally one of the worst ways to go. He had a fairly easy departure. But what really impressed me more than anything else was the state of all the other patients in the same ward. They were all in various stages of psychophysical disintegration. The mind stops to work. The senses don't work the way they're supposed to. We wake up and we flick on the light switch without even thinking in the morning. What happens when you're not able to do that? Either you're not able to get up, or you're not able to remember how to turn on the lights. That day is coming, folks. Believe it. You will experience it. Unless we're taken out by an assassin's bullet or something like that. There are many ways to go. But this psychophysical disintegration is a big part of death. And for most people who die suddenly, especially, it comes very radically, and everything is very abruptly and rudely taken away from them, and it's a real wake-up call, as we say. So if we have a warning that death is coming, then we're very fortunate, like Parikshit Maharaj. And now we can appreciate. Now that we have this human form of life, we can take advantage of what the human form of life has to offer. The dogs and the cats and other lower species, they have the same kind of gross sense gratification that we have. So that's not really the asset, or at least it's not the chief asset of the human form of life. The chief asset of the human form of life is the discrimination to try to figure out what's going on. But when we are adharmic, then that discrimination is also removed and everything becomes totally confusing. Tamoguna especially means that everything, you can't even begin to tell which end is up. This happened to my mother. She had a massive heart attack and probably some stroke as well. And it was several months before she could even understand whether it was day or night. I used to go and visit her in the hospital. And it took a while for her to recognize who we were. Now she's almost back to normal, but I mean, this is a very delicate balance. I was with a medical student once in Vrindavan who was just marveling over, she was in her studies at that point, and just learning all the different ways and that, you know, all the different conditions that have to be met in order to make a so-called healthy, normal human life possible. There are thousands. And any one of them is removed and there's immediately a problem. And there are so many things that can go wrong that they actually are strong enough to kill us, what to speak of make us uncomfortable. And if we get a cold, we're thinking that it's a big deal and something to complain about. So this is various conditions. This is what it means to be conditioned. We really have no idea what it means to be unfettered, to be unconditioned, to see reality ontologically, which means as it is. We have no idea. Therefore, we don't know what love is either. Love is basically the most important thing in this world, and we have no experience of it. This is the great irony. Because we're so eager to have it without paying the price, therefore we settle on something which is comparable but not at all of the same quality. It's like when someone wants to have a diamond but does not want to buy a diamond. There are two options. You can steal one, or you can buy a cubic zirconia. Cubic zirconia is synthetic diamond. So most people cannot afford or choose not to pay the money that is required to get a real diamond. And spiritual life is a little bit like that also. Those of us who are overwhelmed by our conditioning and our conditions that arise from that conditioning, we may not choose to actually pay the price. And this is the struggle. This is the real thing that we have to do in the human form of life, is to work on this. We have an opportunity to get out of this cycle here and now. A big part of that is to understand how we were entangled to begin with. These are the unique things that human life can offer us, that other forms, even demigod forms, practically speaking, it's really not possible for them even to cultivate Krishna consciousness in the same ways that it is for us. Therefore, the devas are lined up, especially in this yuga, waiting to take birth in that circumstance, in that condition, if you will, in which he can simply chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, here and now, in the human form of life, it's 2010, we're in Los Angeles, we're fortunate enough to be sitting at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada in New Dwarka. And it happens to be the Kartik month of Damodar, and we have a few days only left of this month, auspicious month. Anything that we do in devotional service in the month of Kartik, in the month of Damodar, it is much, much more efficacious, much more beneficial. So let us take advantage of this chance to chant the holy name of Krishna, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully, to associate properly with Vaishnavas, to take prasadam, to serve the deity. We're already living in a holy place. This is the important thing. So these are a few things we can think of. I'm sorry I didn't prepare anything for this class, but it's a very nice verse. It's something we can see how Srila Prabhupada is not inventing anything, because we often hear throughout Srila Prabhupada's preaching, he's giving this very analogy to explain reincarnation and its principles. So here we find how everything is rooted. Everything that the pure devotee is speaking is rooted in the Shabda, as the Vedanta Sutra says. Anavriti Shabdat. And what's the other one? Everything comes from Shruti. Anybody know that sutra? Just now I can't remember it. Shastra Yonitvat. Sorry, that's it. Everything comes from the Shastra. Shastra Yonitvat. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Anybody have any question or comment? Arjita Prabhu.
On your last point about cubic zirconium. It's interesting to know that in the early days of synthetic diamonds, they were very, very crude. But nowadays, spurred on mostly by a Russian consortium, they become so good
yeah.
that it's very difficult to distinguish between the fake diamond and the real diamond. So much so that De Beers, you know, the biggest diamond cartel, they're insisting that real diamonds have to have some very, very minutely noticeable number put on them so that you can distinguish between the real one and the false one. So when you take that analogy to the spiritual side,
yeah.
it's very difficult to decide what's really spiritual and what's not in Kali Yuga.
Yeah.
Because it's people in general are not educated.
Nor are they dharmic.
Yeah.
And that just confuses
so,
everything.
You know, without a guide, and like Srila Prabhupada, you know, it's so easy to fall into the trap of buying the cubic zirconium and thinking that you're getting diamond. You may really want a diamond, but if you can't tell the difference, this is what's happening to people nowadays. They go out there with thousands of dollars and they buy a fake diamond thinking it's the real thing.
Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for taking the order of your spiritual master very seriously and for saving all of us, because but for the divine grace of Krishna in the form of Srila Prabhupada, we would really have no hope. I used to be a jeweler. I know this thing. And when I was in India one time, I was in the train station in, I think it was Bhubaneswar, and someone came to me with a very good story also. He showed me some diamonds. He wrapped them up. They were in the proper little thing that they usually come in, various jewels. He said, I used to work for a big jeweler in Bombay. I stole these, and now I'm selling them. And I took a look at them, and my friend, who was also a jeweler at that time, he was also looking at them, and we thought they looked pretty good. And we were tempted to pay some easy money to get something very valuable, but we thought on the grounds of virtue it would not be a good idea, especially in a holy place. And so we very politely wished the man a good afternoon. Now we took our train up to, from Bhubaneswar, I think it was the next stop is Cuttack, and there we got out at the platform to get some water. And lo and behold, another gentleman came up to us and showed us the same jewels and said, I used to work in Mumbai. I stole these from my employer, and I'm going to, you see. So especially in spiritual life, as you're pointing out, this is and especially nowadays, because yoga and even kirtan and these things are very, very popular, but sarvochishtam yatapaya, you cannot take the Harinam or the Krishna Katha from the lips of a non-devotee. Otherwise, you will be poisoned. The milk is good, the Hari Katha is good, but there's poison there also, if that person is an envious non-devotee, especially if the person is a Mayavadi, which is quite often the case. Nowadays, for the last 100 years or so, we have what we call Hinduism. It's a khichdi, hodgepodge of all sorts of mainly neo-Advaitin ideologies that were invented by a handful of 19th century reformers at the end of the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, every one of which was British educated, mind you, and half of which were also nationalists. This is what is now Hinduism. This has indelibly shaped the character of what is modern-day Hinduism. And just as a person who is conditioned by the modes of material nature in a particular material body is not really seeing the clear reality, so in the same way, we're not going to get a clear sense of dharma even if we're born in India nowadays. At least that's my observation. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what it seems to me. So we have to be very careful, and we have to be very, very grateful that Srila Prabhupada saved us. All glories to his divine grace.